T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
It's time to talk all things Dirty Birds. It's Falcons Flyover with John Chuckery on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
And we're back in the Kia Studios on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show, hanging out with you here on a Thursday night. 404-741-0929. That is the phone line. That is also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line to interact with us. Text line is back up and running, by the way, so thanks to the folks that are interacting with us on there. We stream online at 929thegame.com. Catch us live, replays of all the shows. Download your radio.com app to catch us on the go. Be a part of us on the move. Cool new feature. Listen back in real time to anything on the station from the past 24 hours. Follow the station on social media at 929thegame, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter. The best way to keep up with this show, follow me on Twitter. Some of you have already done that this evening. Thank you for following me. It's at JMCH316, at JMCH316. This is the Falcon Flyover. It is your nightly look at all things Atlanta Falcons. So ESPN, you know, we're at that time of the year where everybody's got their lists and this, that, and the other about, you know, the NFL. So ESPN's latest is daring moves for all 32 NFL teams this offseason. Daring moves. Okay. So with the fact, and by the way, this is not Vaughn McClure that wrote this, by the way. They had, like, a few different writers that went through all of, like, the divisions and stuff like that. So here's the daring move for the Atlanta Falcons. And I don't necessarily disagree with this. This goes back to what I've been trying to preach. Atlanta Falcons continue to draft offense. In the past 3 seasons, the Falcons' defense has never ranked higher than 20th in DVOA. The likely impending losses of Vic Beasley and cut candidate Keanu Neal offer them even bleaker prospects for 2020. Conventional wisdom suggests the team should try to find the replacements in the draft, but the Falcons have left cap space in any team in the NFC South and are at the tail end of their Super Bowl window with a 35-year-old Matt Ryan at quarterback. They have no choice but to enter the 2020 season with holes, and if they want to have one more chance with Ryan, then they should leave those holes on the units with the greatest year-to-year volatility, defense, and special teams. The Falcons still have blue-chip skill players on offense in Ryan, Julio, Ridley, but probably could lose Freeman and Austin Hooper. Drafting a running back early, preferably one with strong receiving chops, would provide an impact rookie on the side of the ball with the surest dividend on investments. That approach would have an underwhelming defensive roster, but the Falcons themselves reached Super Bowl in 2016 with a 26th-ranked defense by DVOA, and the Saints won the Super Bowl with the 17th-ranked DVOA defense. Both those teams reach heights thanks to their excellent offenses. It would take luck, but this season's Falcons could follow that same path to success. This is what I've been saying how long now. Despite having Dan and the drafts and everything else, when you have Matt and Julio and Ridley and Sanu and Hooper and Freeman, they are an offensive-minded team first. And that's why the draft capital was spent into protect our $150 million quarterback. Would we love to see the defense get better? Yes. But the reality is that, and I heard radio pundits say, oh, well, they're moving away from being an offensive-minded team. That's not true until Matt and Julio and those guys leave. And I said that they're not moving away from an offensive-minded team. They want to be a high-octane offense. That's what you have those guys for, because I know what Matt is. Matt's 4,000 yards and almost 30 touchdowns. Julio's the best wide receiver. Productive tight end. Really good young player at wide receiver. I know what those guys are. They're not moving away from that. That's where most of their best players are, is on that side of the football. You've built around Matt Ryan. The reason the franchise has a pulse is because that guy at quarterback. Not because Dan got here to bring that Seattle defense. Oh, okay. You mean the one that Pete Carroll ran? That one? Oh, okay. The one where y'all tried to sell me on Dan Quinn and Gus Bradley running that defense. Oh, really? Where was Dan when Richard Sherman was drafted? Oh, Gainesville, Florida. That's right. Stop. But anyway, so you get me all fired up here. And by the way, we should play. We may play that clip. I may have to get. I don't know if I have enough time. Ken, go back to Andy and Randy's show in the AMA, okay? Because they chatted a little bit about me while you're in break and all that kind of stuff. Go back into their final hour, the final segment, 140, is Ask Me Anything. I'm involved in, like, the first question and stuff like that, and I'll explain myself, and that's life. But anyway, so pull that up for me if you could and have that ready for the next segment. See, we do this kind of on the fly. But here's the thing. They're an offensive-minded team first. I get it. Now, listen, here's the thing, though. I don't want to draft a running back at 16. I just got done saying, too, by the way, running back might be their second biggest need. But you have got to sack the quarterback. You have to do something to sack the quarterback. You can't have a gaping wound like that. You know why else they were in the Super Bowl? Because Vic was able to get 15 and a half sacks. You can't deny that that wasn't an important thing that happened, was him being able to sack the quarterback that year. I don't care if it was fluky or whatever. 15 and a half sacks is 15 and a half sacks in the NFL. You can't dumb your way to that. If you could, everybody would do it. Something clicked. Yes, led by the offense, but you got to have that closing there. So they have to have pass rush. But if you told me they took second round running back or something, I wouldn't be disappointed. If they have a second round pick, me personally, I'd trade up and go get some. Go get me one of those elite guys on defense. Go get me one of those elite guys. Speaking of running back, and this is a name I've been intrigued by, and if you listen to our college football show, you've heard me talk a lot about this guy. It's been reported that Cam Akers, who's the running back out of Florida State, remember he was the number one running back in America coming into his freshman year, all the hype and hoopla, five stars, going to Florida State. I've said many times about Cam Akers that he would be a better pro than he was in college because his career was wasted at Florida State. And he got better as his career went on. But given the mess that that program has been and just not being able to figure things out, I've said many times, his career will be wasted at Florida State, and it was. He met with the Falcons, and there are reports that they are very interested in them. Cam Akers says the Falcons told him they were, quote-unquote, very interested in him when he spoke with him this week. That's from William McFadden of Falcons.com. Listen, I like Cam Akers. I don't think he was as abused in college as some other guys, but I could tell you, I would be happy. Now, I don't think you don't draft Cam Akers in the first round, okay? I'm not even sure he's a second round running back. But if you told me they took a flyer, yeah, third, fourth round is where I'm thinking. If you told me they took a third, fourth round flyer on Cam Akers, I'd be all in for that. I think Cam Akers could be a very good pro when all is said and done. I think he could be a guy who could be very productive. I think he's kind of sneaky good. I think he's going to have a better NFL career than he did a college career. And he had some good moments in college, but I think he's going to be a better pro than he was at Florida State. So that's a name I'm intrigued by. I'd be fine with that. You tell me third, fourth round they get Cam Akers, I'm all in. I'm all in. I think he could be a sneaky good pro. Now, another guy that I think you'd have to be willing to spend some decent capital. When I say decent capital, fifth, sixth round pick. Supposedly the Falcons met with Rodrigo. I would love for them to draft Rodrigo. I really would. Yeah, I know they signed, what's his name, Younghoe Koo. Okay. Go get me Rodrigo. Are you willing, would you be willing as a Falcons fan to draft Rodrigo in the fifth round? I would. What the hell you got to lose, man? Listen, this franchise has got to start thinking about what can I do now? What do I got? I gotta roll the dice. I gotta take some risks. I gotta take some chances. What did Apollo Creed say? There is no tomorrow. There's no tomorrow for Dan and Thomas. Better do some things that are splashy that get this thing going back on track. I think Rodrigo would be a fun pick. Like I said, though, you may have to pick him in the fifth round. And Randy McMichael and I disagreed with this. I very much think Rodrigo Blankenship could be a fifth-round pick as a kicker. I don't think he's one of those guys, seventh round or free agent. I think somebody will spend some cap. I'm not telling you he's a first or second-round draft pick as a kicker, okay? I think fifth round, I think somebody will snatch him up. Very consistent in college. He fits an NFL mold of a kicker. Big leg, good consistency. I'd be very happy. I'd be very happy. Because I tell you this, they have to bring some kickers in. I don't care if they did sign Younghoe Koo. You don't go into this season with the same thing that happened to you last year, thinking that that spot's locked up and Tavecchio's the guy and we're all good. And I say all the time, the problem was not getting rid of Matt Bryan, because you saw what ended up happening with Matt Bryan. The idea is you get rid of a guy a year early, not a year too late. And bringing Matt Bryant back and all that ended up being too late. You just didn't have the right guy to fill in for him. But I'd be all for that move. I'd be all for the idea of Rodrigo. I think this could be a very interesting draft. They should let me draft. I've said this before. Let me run the draft. Okay? Let me run the draft and let me go get us some guys that are going to – let me make some wheeling and dealing. Let me make some moves that are going to get us some guys to get this thing done. Because it's time to win the Super Bowl and capitalize on it. And that story in ESPN, it's what I've been telling y'all. They are an offensive-minded team. They always will be as long as Matt's here. When you have one of the elite quarterbacks in the NFL, you are not a defensive-minded team. You just don't. Look at the Seattle Seahawks. Isn't that a good example? You know, they were, when Russell Wilson was a rookie and a game manager, they were an elite-level defense. But as Russell Wilson has become elite, guess what? They're an offensive-minded football. Does Pete Carroll want to play tough defense and all that? Yeah, their identity is with Russell Wilson and what they do offensively now, because he's that good. When you have one of those guys, now, you still have to play defense. You still have to run the football. I'm not telling you not. But what I'm saying is that they're going to put – and that's why that's the only thing that scares me about Thomas – is what will they do in the first round? They desperately need pass rush. But, boy, sometimes they can't help themselves and go get, you know, one of those shiny objects out there. All right, coming up, that's life. Ken, you got the clip that from AMA? Oh, wow. It's not up on the website? Wow. Okay, wow. All right, I may have to think, I may have to help out on all this. All right. I'm going to tell you because I think I'm becoming a CBD success story. We'll talk about a few of those things coming up in That's Life. Chuck from the Key Studios on Sports Radio 910 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Welcome back into the Key Studios on a Thursday night. 9:23 on the John Chuckery Show. You know what time it is.
That's life.
That's life.
That's what all the people say.
404-741-0929. That is the phone line. That is also the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. Follow me on social media. It's at JMCH316, at JMCH316. A little disappointed, man. We went on the website, and they don't have the AMA posted on the midday show. I mean, what kind of amateur hour show are they running there? Who the hell's producing that thing? Oh, Brian, that's right. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Brian and Wendy, there you go. Well, can't trust them to do anything right. So the reason we were trying to bring this up, if you listen to the midday AMA today, which is the Ask Me Anything. They get these questions in, people ask questions. The question asked was, who's more angry, Randy McMichael or me? And some people on Twitter were going back and forth with this as well. I said it's me because my anger is also passion. See, Randy's not passionate about, he's passionate about his family and all that stuff. We all are, right? But, like, I'm passionate about the Falcons. They frustrate the living hell out of me, but I continue to root for them, and I'm passionate about them. I'm passionate about the Atlanta Braves and where they're at right now. So I think sometimes my passion gets misinterpreted for anger. Now, I will admit I'm angry because, well, a few things. One is there's so much craziness in the world right now that, like, people are nuts. This are. There's just crazy people everywhere. And I'll be honest, I don't suffer fools very well. I'm not good about that. I can't deal with it. And I watch some of these people and how they live their life on a day-to-day basis, and I just shake my head and think, how can that person even put their pants on in the morning? How can that person even tie their shoes? So I get a little agitated by all that kind of stuff. So I fully admit that. But yes, I am definitely more angry than Randy Mack. Now, there's the two biggest reasons why. The reason why, one is I've got an ex-wife, and two is he's got an NFL pension. So what's he got to be angry about? I got an ex-wife that I still got to pay. He's got an NFL pension coming to him. Swap those two things out, and then tell me who's angrier. Let Randy have an ex-wife to pay for, and give me the NFL pension. I'll be Johnny Go Happy Lucky, man, for the rest of my life if I got all that coming to me. God bless. Anyway, all right, a couple other things I want to get into. You know, I've been kind of on this CBD journey of creams and lotions and all that. I got to say, I think I've found it and figured it all out. Now, it's probably going to sound crazy what I'm about to say, okay? But, like, my feet have been really sore and things like that and had some issues. So here's what I've done. I've got like a 250 milligram foot cream that I'm using now. And then I've got my 1,000 milligram like muscle cream, balm, whatever you want to call it. And I've also got now a 800 milligram like menthol roller balm. You know what I mean? You know, imagine like Bengay, like in a roller, like you'd roll deodorant or something like that, okay? So that's like 2,050 milligrams. But I'll tell you this, and I'm not kidding you when I say this, in about 2 weeks, I feel totally different. My feet feel totally different than what my knee and my feet. My knee is giving me, I'm going to have to go to an orthopedic specialist and have my knee looked at, okay? I know I've got something screwed up with my knee. And that goes back to steroid-infused 565-pound squatting days, okay? You know, back in the old days of, I don't need a bar, I don't need knee pads, I don't need this. Just put that bare metal bar on my shoulders. I got that big frame across back there. It fits right in there, okay? And my buddies used to say, just load up the wagon wheels and go up and down, okay? That's what you did. If you worked out at Main Event Fitness, either you better be ready to swing some wagon wheels because Scott Steiner and Kevin Nash and The Big Show and Benoit and Sting and all those guys are there. You better be able to sling some iron or just go home. Now, Stacy Keibler and Kimberly Page were there as well, you know, so that. And by the way, you know who else I used to see all the time? Rena Mero. And she was Rena Mero. She wasn't Sable back then. This is when Mark Mero was transitioning from going from WCW to WWF. So she hadn't even been on TV. She wasn't Sable. There was none of that. I just used to see Mark and Rena at the gym, and I was like, who is that woman? Holy smokes. And then, like, as years go on, you're like, wait a second, that's Sable. I used to see her at the gym all the time. But anyway, but this CBD stuff, I'm beginning to become a real believer in it. I gotta tell you, my knee feels different. My feet feel different. I use it on my temples now and stuff like that. I got to say, if you find the right stuff in the right cocktail mix, you know, to go along with it, I don't know if it's for... I'm not telling you that you need to put 2,000 milligrams a day, on your feet or something like that. But do what you got to do, man, because I'm doing it. I know one thing. It ain't cheap because that's about $120 worth of product that I'm using a day on my feet. The little container cream, the foot lotion, and the muscle balm, it's about $120. It's about $120 for all that kind of stuff. But listen, you got to do what you got to do to feel better, right? Now, I'm not doing the edibles, and I really haven't gotten into all that kind of stuff yet. I'll leave that for Hugh and everybody else, you know what I mean? And I know some of that stuff doesn't have the THC, so you don't have to worry about it. But right now, what I'm doing is working, and I can definitely feel a difference. It's taken a few weeks, but I can definitely feel better and different and things like that compared to what I was. Like a month ago, I couldn't walk on my knee. A month ago, my feet were so banged up, like I just, you know, and part of it's my diabetes and stuff like that. You just don't get the nerve. You get the nerve endings just aren't quite there, you know, but stuff is working great. One other story I wanted to get to as well. Did you see this kid in Australia that he's a 9-year-old boy and he's got this like rare form of dwarfism and he was being bullied at school, okay? And like I said, I think he's 9 years old. He's being bullied at school by a lot of kids and his mom put out a video, which I'm not always 100% on board with some of these videos that they put out or whatever like that. But she put out this video of her son crying and upset about because he wanted to commit suicide and said, see what this is doing. And I think they've changed schools and things like that. And he had a lot of celebrities that came out and rallied behind him, you know, Hugh Jackman and a lot of these Australian celebrities and stuff like that. And it was a cool thing. It was a really cool thing. This to me is even better though, okay? Because people were doing things like raising money for him, okay? They were going to send him to Disneyland and all that kind of stuff. Well, the family of this Quaiden Bales, the Australian boy with dwarfism, seen talking about wanting to kill himself after being bullied and stuff like that, okay? He had a GoFundMe account and all this kind of stuff, which, by the way, the GoFundMe, it was started by comedian Brad Williams, who also is a dwarf, okay? Supposedly, that thing got up to almost $500,000 in money, okay? Well, what they're going to do is they're going to donate the trip and all the funds to charity. Now, that's legit. Now, if they do that, they really do donate the trip and the money and things like that. That's what they're doing. Okay, so they've already got money. But still, though, $500,000 in a trip to Disney World is $500,000 in a trip to Disney World. I'm still going to give them credit for the fact of putting this money to good use. You know, putting this money to good use. They got a couple of organizations that they're going to give to. Dwarfism Awareness Australia. Balunu Healing Foundation. That they said they're going to give money to all of them. So, listen, they may be well off, but I can tell you, most people in that position, they would take the benefits that come along, you know, with this. And listen, if it's a GoFundMe page and people donated, then it's their money, you know. So I'll give them credit after all that, you know, to donate that and to give that to more kids and things in need. That's a good thing. I will definitely give them credit, and I understand if they're, you know, if they've got that kind of money, I get all that. But still, most people still would not listen. $500,000 is $500,000, you know. I mean, it just is. So good for them for taking this thing and putting an even more positive spin on all of this. You know, I mean, just using it more for what that kind of money should be intended for. Go help other kids. Go help other kids with it. So I think the kid's going to be fine. It sounds like he's going to be all right with everything. But, you know, it is a shame. I mean, we talked about this the other day on the show. You know, my daughter has fought some bullying things. And, you know, I will say that, you know, it's when it's your kid, you feel, you know, feel a little bit different, stuff like that. And I said it the other night. I would tell you, the more you keep your kids off social media, the better. I'm telling you. Because truthfully, for my daughter, that's where this all started. And my thing is, I said, why don't you confront them face-to-face, one-on-one, and see if they say the same things? But she won't do that. She's a very sweet girl and won't do all that kind of stuff. But that's, you know, that's kind of how you have to handle it. And that's tough for a kid, man. I get it. You know, I'm a little different mold. I don't care if people hate me or love me or like me or whatever like that. Trust me. My girlfriend will even be the first one to tell you that at times I act like I don't really care if anybody loves me or not. It's fine. I mean, I love my daughter, take care of her. That's all that matters, you know, to me for all of it. But so good stuff there from this particular family. All right, when we get back, Sarah Spencer is going to join us, beat writer for the Atlanta Hawks for the AJC, as the Hawks down to their last 22 games of the regular season. We'll hear from her next. Chuck Reed, the Key Studios, Sports Radio 910 The Game. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is a John Chuck Reed show, coming to you live here on a Thursday evening. Well, a lot of Hawks action here as we get toward the last part of this season, 60 games in. So it's going to be a marathon, or I should say a sprint, not a marathon here, as the Hawks get ready toward the wrap-up this last third of their season. We go out to the WadeFord.com hotline. She is the beat writer for the Atlanta Hawks for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Sarah Spence joining us here. You can follow her on Twitter. It's Sarah_K_Spence. Sarah's always appreciate the time. Thanks for jumping on with me for a few minutes.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's talk a little bit first, Sarah, talking about Clint Capela. Obviously still kind of fighting that foot issue, and the Hawks have kind of said, you know, we're going to take this thing slowly. You know, realistically, how much do you think that he's going to play the rest of the season for the Hawks, given that there's really nothing for this franchise to play for other than giving their rookies and young guys as much time as possible? Are we going to see much of him at all, even when he does come back?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point, and I think that's something that people have to keep in mind when I know everyone's chomping at the bit for Clint Capela to come back, and I get it, you know, but the Hawks are 17-43. There's not much that they're playing for right now. I think the main focus, honestly, is just can he come back and play enough to where, you know, you're not starting from scratch next season, and that's not the first game experience that kind of the, you know, the core five, you know, young guys that they have right now, you know, play with him. So I think the biggest thing that can be added, you know, this season is just like getting some games under their belt together so that next season, you know, when you're starting from scratch, you know, you're not starting from scratch all the way. He probably won't come back until the middle of March though. And when he does, he'll probably be on a minute restriction. So that, you know, there's that to consider.
Sarah, tell me a little bit about, has Coach Pierce talked about the rookie class from the standpoint of, you know, we always hear about that rookie wall, and of course these guys are into really uncharted territory with how many games that they've played. I mean, they've literally almost played not quite twice as many as they would have in a college schedule, but not very far from it. How has Coach Pierce been, or what's been his thought process about how the rookies as a whole have played here in this last kind of third of the season?
Yeah, both of them have kind of had interesting paths. So Cam Reddish obviously started off the season quite bad on offense. He was one of the worst offensive players, you know, in the league for a while there. But he's always been a good, you know, on-ball defender. And then he's really, really come on pretty much since January. So he kind of had this, you know, steady rise a little bit. And then all of a sudden, you know, you just, he's kind of come out of nowhere. If you weren't paying attention for all those games before, so he's really seen a lot of. Now you're really starting to see his offensive, you know, burst. You're really starting to see him. You're starting to see him give the Hawks a little bit of that X factor they were missing. You know, he's poking the ball out for steals and getting fast break dunks. You know, and those big energy plays and you know. So really, that's kind of been his trajectory. And Lloyd has pretty much said the whole time, you know, Cam hasn't lost confidence. It's just a matter of when shots go down and when he starts to feel comfortable. And then, so it's kind of funny with Cam. It's almost kind of like the opposite of a rookie wall, you know, because he started to surge a little bit later on in the season. With DeAndre Hunter, he's been a little up and down all season, which a lot of rookies are. DeAndre Hunter is not one of those flashy players, and Lloyd will tell you that too. You know, Trae Young gets so much attention. He's so flashy. He's so crafty. You know, he's shooting for the logo. DeAndre Hunter is more one of those just like, you know, slow and steady guys, reliable guys. But he's been a little bit up and down, you know, as rookie seasons go. And I think with both of those guys, I think the thing that you kind of have to remember is, you know, they're rookies, they're adjusting to the league, and they've been playing really, really heavy minutes from the get-go. So these guys they're barely rookies at this point. You know, they've got so much playing experience under their belt, which that's what the Hawks want. Like, they're part of the core five that the Hawks are building around, that they see as kind of the future of the franchise under Travis Schlenk. And, you know, they've gotten a lot of playing time under their belt, which will benefit them more, you know, moving forward.
Sarah Spencer joining us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. She's the Hawks beat writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. I'm going to ask you the question that we discussed earlier on the show tonight. And the fact is, if the Hawks are going to be trying to make a run for a playoff spot next year, even in the Eastern Conference, if you look over the last several years, you know, you've needed to be at least 500, you know, somewhere between maybe 41 to 44 wins in the Eastern Conference. The reality is that you're talking about having to win, you know, almost 20 more games next year. If you just kind of project out where the Hawks are going to finish this year, maybe 22 to 24 wins. So you're talking about almost 20 more wins over the course of the year. Is that a realistic jump for an NBA team in 1 year? If you add LeBron James, that's one thing. But short of adding LeBron James or Giannis or something like that, do you think that that's a realistic jump and that could be a realistic goal for the Hawks for next season?
Yeah, it's hard to say what even that barrier, because obviously every year, you know, kind of the goalposts move as far as what you have to, kind of where you have to get in order to be in playoff contention. You know, like this year, the Magic are at their eighth in the East right now, and they're like 26-32, you know. So there's a lot of different moving goalposts, particularly in the East, because the East is just, you know, less stacked than the West. As far as the Hawks, it's just so hard to say. I feel like this is that point in the season where, you know, even fans, you know, we talk about players hitting a wall. I feel like at this point, fans kind of hit a wall and you check out of this season and you're like, you know, oh, but what about next season? You know, and I think at this point for me, particularly covering the team, it's just so hard to say what they'd have to get to. It's hard to say what they'll even look like. You know, even me being around the team as much as I have or as much as I am, the only thing I've seen Clint Capella do is like some sprints and some agility drills on the side of the court during shoot around. So it's hard to say how much better he will make them. It's hard to say how John Collins, who's been shooting 50% from three in February, it's hard to say how John will play at the four alongside Capella at the five. It's hard to see, you know, just how much Trae and Capella will gel right away. And, you know, that question also assumes, you know, we know who's going to be healthy next season, which you never know. You know, hopefully everyone is, of course. I think for me, I hate to dodge the question. It's just a little hard to say at this point. I feel like that's almost looking so far in the future, you know. But I mean, I think it's hard to picture this team, you know, especially with the rookies getting as much time under their belt as they have. And then you add Capella, who, you know, I mean, I've seen him play, you know, with Houston this season, and he's just such a beast. It's hard to picture this team not getting better and not making progress with the addition of him. But it's just a little hard to say at this point.
Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is the John Chuckery Show, coming to you here live on a Thursday evening out on the WaitForIt.com hotline. She is the Atlanta Hawks beat writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Sarah Spencer spending a few minutes here with us. I'm curious, you know, obviously Trae Young wasn't selected as one of the guys to compete for the Olympic team, and we had Travis Schlenk on, and he's talked about the politics and different things like that. But I'm curious, you know, because there's still a lot of chatter about what is Trae Young, and there is still a lot of negativity when you get into some of the national media and things about Trae Young. I don't think so much locally, but I think nationally. Does Trae kind of listen to some of this stuff? Does he know what is said about him out there? How kind of in tune is Trae Young to what some of the national pundits, if you will, have their opinions about him?
I think he hears it. I think it would be hard to be on social media, and you know all the young guys are. I think it would be hard to be on Twitter and be on Instagram and just, you know, exist on the internet, you know, as we all do in this business. I think it would be hard for him to not know or to not hear it. I think there's a difference between, you know, and I mean, he knows what people say about him and Luka, and him and Luka are, they're friendly, you know, they're not, it's not the rivalry people maybe want it to be. You know, he knows what people say. I mean, he had that tweet earlier in the year when he said, your apology needs to be as loud as the disrespect is, or as the disrespect was. So he knows what people say about him. He knows what people say about his defense and his size, which, you know, I actually think against Orlando, he had a couple good defensive plays. But his size does hurt him on defense. He's always going to be, you know, he's consistently, you know, a negative on defense. But I think there's a difference between knowing what people are saying and letting it affect you. At least in a negative way. I think for him, at least what I have observed is that he lets it motivate him, but I don't know if it bothers him necessarily. I think he just kind of uses it as a motivating tactic, which if that's one of the things that's motivating him, I believe that's working because he's definitely having a good season.
Sarah, last thing for you. Let's talk a little bit about John Collins here. Obviously, we know about the time that was missed. I think a total of 25 games that was missed earlier in the season. And there does seem to be something about when he is on the court. Certainly, we know how good he can be. How does Coach Pierce kind of look at him? Does this organization feel like that, you know, he can be a 75, you know, game kind of guy? You know, he's missed 25, you know, games this year with the suspension, but he missed, you know, 21, 22 games, I think it was last year, because of injury and things like that. So it's not like he hasn't missed time the last couple of years. How do they view him? Do they look at him as he really is a legitimate number two piece in this league to a Trae Young? Or, you know, do they still think that he's got some growth and some room that he needs to continue to grow to try to be that piece?
Well, I'm really glad you asked this because we actually talked to Lloyd Pierce about this today. So this is great timing. Basically, with Collins, and I know he had that one, I think it was kind of that was before I was here, but I think last year he had kind of an ankle issue. And then this year, obviously, he had the suspension, which, I mean, you can't count on that. You know, that kind of came out of left field. So injuries aside, I mean, he's a high usage guy, obviously, especially for his size. But no, I mean, especially with the way that he's been playing lately, he came into this. I remember having a conversation with John. This is actually one of the first interviews I did when I came down here for this job. I had a conversation with John about, you know, what were his goals for the season, and he wants to be that versatile, or he wants to be that versatile guy, kind of that stretch guy. The Hawks view him as a power forward, even though he plays some small ball five. So he wants to be kind of like, you know, like how Pascal Siakam plays, you know, like a guy who can do a lot of different things. He can stretch the floor for you, but is also that rim runner, that guy that can get behind the defense. And particularly, I mean, he's making like some franchise history right now. He's shot like 50% from the field for like 20 straight games. He's shooting 50% from three in February. He's actually tied with Kevin Huerter for the highest 3-point percentage on the team. Obviously he takes them at, you know, a much lower volume than Kevin or Trae does. But no, I mean, Lloyd said today, if you're, you know, he had a conversation with John where he basically said, if you're healthy and you're playing, you know, and you're playing like this, you're our second all-star. So he's putting him in the same category as Trae with the caveat of, you know, as long as you're healthy and you're out there. Which have kind of been the two things that have been missing so far. When he came back from suspension this year, it took him a couple games to, you know, look like himself, and then now he's been on this streak pretty consistently. So, no, I mean, they're high on him, even with the questions of how's he going to fit alongside Capella. With what he's doing this on this streak, it shouldn't be a problem at all, you know. Capella might be that, like, true rim runner, but if John can stretch the floor, then that's not going to be an issue. So, no, I mean, I think that they definitely are building around him, and they see him as – they see Trae and John as, like, that 1-2 punch. They see him as someone they want to build around and, you know, a big piece of what they're trying to do.
She's on Twitter at @Sarah_K_Spence, and she is the Hawks beat writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Sarah Spencer joined us here on the WaitForIt.com hotline. As always, Sarah, appreciate the time. Thanks for jumping on with us, and we'll continue to talk here as we get to this last little bit of the season.
Thank you so much for having me.
You got it. John Chuck, we're here. We'll be back. Sports Radio 929 The Game.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.